My dad was the local historian eventually for a little village in Worley, up in Lancashire, and he was discovering things from talking to old ladies in the street and so on. And that, to me, became my way into history too. And although I couldn't compete on his patch, you know, that's certainly what helped me to identify with history.
How old were you when that happened?
That must have been, I must have been, you know, 16, 17, A-level period, you know. And at that stage, I was very much into English and drama and was writing plays and so on. And then I went off to Bristol University, 1962, to do a general honours degree in English drama and philosophy. And so, again, funnily enough, the drama was a way into history because we did, you know, early medieval drama and Quemquarity's trope and all that sort of early liturgical stuff. So that was a sort of indirect way. And so I came out with a degree, but never had any formal degree in history or indeed formal teaching degree, though I did go straight into teaching for a year after leaving university. But in 65, you didn't need to have done teacher training. Yeah. I did consider it at one stage, but, you know, Lancashire Education Committee gave me a job without it.
Where were you teaching when you first started?
Secondary Technical School. Lovely bunch of kids, primarily, though, teaching English and using drama as a medium also for engaging them. Worked particularly well with the bad lads, you know, 4E and so on. It was good fun. Then I went into television indirectly. I worked for UPI News Film out at Denham, writing news film scripts overnight, an overnight desker. And you used to wake up about 4 in the morning because you were running off the Romeo scripts, and that gave you nice static electric shocks.
So it woke you up.
And then I worked for Viz News, which was another news film dissemination agency. And then in 1968, I joined the BBC in Plymouth, the Old West region, as a journalist, essentially, you know, writing news bulletins and so on. But gradually, I was seen as the sort of the soft story, the reflective story, the anniversary, you know, 100 years on from whatever the it wouldn't be 100 years, but from the plague in Exeter or whatever.
Yeah.
So I developed my history storytelling skills, I suppose, indirectly. Left the BBC in 1980 because Thatcher got me and the job I'd been appointed to disappeared.
Oh.
So then I worked with Michael Barrett, who used to front Nationwide, doing corporate videos. And then ultimately I was lucky to get this job with Yorkshire Television. And that really was the first time that my drama background was exploited to the full, you know.
What year was that?
I think I started with them in February 1983. Mm. And then stayed there until 95.
And how did you get involved in how we used to live?
I was essentially appointed to do that.
Yeah. That was the start of it, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't the start of the series. It started in 1968.
Oh, goodness.
With the start of commercial television in the English regions. And I understand that the How We Used to Live series started with Jess Yates. So I took over from at least 3 different producers.
Apart from Asa Briggs' massive tomes, on broadcasting, there doesn't seem to be much work on the history of broadcasting.
Perhaps it wasn't regarded as a dignified academic subject to look at that aspect of history.
There's loads on film as well, but on schools broadcasting, it's not an area that's been widely researched.
And you got this feeling from the early American research, they're just recycling old bits of news film or old bits of...
Are you saying that the sort of thing we did in this country was pretty unique, doing historical drama and dedicated programmes for schools?
I get the feeling we were in the forefront of doing it when you compare it to the criticism of what people were putting over as educational television in America. Yes, I think How We Used to Live was pioneering in that way. And by the time I joined in 83, 85% of primary schools used it.
That's in the UK?
In the UK.
Goodness.
I'm not sure about Wales. Wales was probably beginning to define itself separately.
So did Yorkshire Television sell it to the other regions, or was it put out by ITV across?
Well, it was ITV schools initially, and therefore disseminated, broadcast throughout Britain. Ultimately, then it moved over and became part of Channel 4's brief and was commissioned by them.
And I was wondering, how much input you had from, say, history advisers or teachers at the time. How it was actually constructed.
When I took over, obviously I was new boy on the block, hired for my drama skills, if anything, rather than my history background. But I've explained to you what gave me that alertness to history, and probably to research and to processing. A guy called Norman Longmate was the history advisor. I think he was a civil servant and had a tie-in with the BBC as well. I didn't know him well because he only stayed with us for one more series. He was the guy who wrote the support material and the teacher's book. Frieda Kelsall had originally joined to write alongside Norman Longmate, and gradually the balance changed and she became the main writer. And as ever in the sort of political world of it, Norman eventually left and Frieda took over. We had an education officer called Michael Scarborough who worked for the education department in Yorkshire Television.
That being so similar to the BBC, I think.
Yeah, and that being the largest education department in the ITV structure, Michael Scarborough was very stimulating and catalytic. He was very good at going out and promoting the series and its use, generating things like sponsorship for... There was a competition sponsored by the Midland Bank, which ran in parallel with the series, in schools, and they would come and create their own history research projects or little dramatic presentations of them and so on. And that happened for a couple of years after I left. Michael was a very bright guy, very catalytic, and I hope he's still well. He's worth talking to, should somebody want to talk to Michael. Lived up in Keighley. And his dad was also a head teacher at one stage, so very much in the teaching tradition. Then, as Frieda took over as the driving force in terms of writing it, we would, as a group of people, with the head of education, Chris Jelly, develop what the next series was going to be. The first series I was involved in was 1902 to 1926, because it seemed apposite at the time. It was a period we hadn't really covered previously. They'd done the Victorians. They immediately before I joined, they'd done World War II, but it seemed an appropriate period to do.
And why did you choose 1926 as your final date?
I don't know, to be honest.
General
I
mean, it was.
That seems like it. I suppose, once looking at the change over that period, I suppose it was partly determined by television logistics, too. That was 20 episodes, shot over a period of 9 months, so it was quite an epic approach to making essentially a soap drama.
What was the commercial logic? Because obviously your advertising revenue from school nil.
What's the commercial logic
of investing so much?
Well, I think the philosophy is just as commercial television did news. It's the good thing on the back of the commerce, and at that stage, ITV was very well funded by the advertising. It became less so, obviously, as over the years, but. It was driven by idealism, and it wasn't just idealism at the centre of Yorkshire Television or ITV It was also the EBU and all those structures. It was idealism on the part of the people involved. We were all idealists because in the end we knew that we were making them to stimulate our children to, you know.
Mm. And was the education portfolio of Yorkshire Television a large one, you know, that history was just one? Or was history the flagship, you know, it was the one they spent most on?
I would say it was the largest until Adam Hart Davis was involved. Oh, yeah. And Adam did the science and math side, and he developed math's eye, scientific eye, and so on. Something that pleases me, Adam always says that I turned him onto history.
Because he's done so many history programmes, hasn't he?
Well, you know, from having an exploring, let's say, technology and maths and science, he suddenly realised there was a history of science, and that's really was the catalyst for him ultimately becoming a performer and a deliverer of scientific history, technological history. So, you know, Adam and I were both bright lads, something of a driving force in those fields. But to return, it was partly determined, I suppose, by not commercial imperatives, but the fact that, you know, you were having a crew for 9 months, and it was quite an epic operation, obviously.
And did you attract quite good actors, you know, well-known actors?
We attracted good actors, one or two actors who ultimately became well-known. Joanna Worley became known after Peter Howitt was in the first series that I did, and Peter was involved in Bread, and he's now a film director. So, yes, extremely good actors, all of whom cared about, you know, turning in a polished end product. And I suppose a lot of the content and the counterpoint of storylines and so on were worked out instinctively rather than perhaps determined by teaching points. You know, so there was a strong degree of post-analysis. It was quite interesting, obviously, doing the First World War, and we'd get letters from retired generals who'd say that we totally misrepresented it, and then we'd get the conscientious objector saying we totally glorified war and so on. And we felt that if you got opposition from both sides, as well as acceptance across a wide field, then you were probably doing your job pretty well. But it was only later, I suppose, that one, with the introduction of the national curriculum and attainment targets and so on, you began perhaps to deconstruct it more.
Yes.
And understand the outcomes, what you were hoping, the nice things, like, you know, each period of time tells its history for its own purposes, and the ability to know that there are many viewpoints of history and that sort of thing. And that was something that later on we began to incorporate in a more informed way.
Yeah, considered way, before you actually did this. I was going to ask you if there was some sort of philosophy about how and what children were learning. Then that's what you're saying, is that
I would say
developed.
I would say it tended to be unspoken. The drive, although Frieda was a teacher and
yes,
terrific, but, you know, drama itself flowers on counterpoint of views and counterpoint of interpretations and so on. So there's something intrinsic in drama that gives different interpretations of history. It's not giving absolutes, it's giving conflict and counterpoint. So I suppose a lot of those things were intrinsic in it, but not necessarily unpacked in the way the national curriculum invited us to unpack it with attainment target two and all those.
Yes. So when Frieda was researching. I mean, she'd obviously, she'd got a background as a history teacher, had she, before she'd come into it?
I believe it was as a history teacher. I mean, she's well worth talking to. Lives in Hebden Bridge.
So it's possible that she had a particular approach to history that was going into what she suggested for storylines.
Yes. I would say we all had woolly left-wing instincts, of course, but we didn't allow that to affect our telling of the end product, I suppose.
When the materials were produced by Frieda and originally Norman, how did they relate that to what they thought was happening in schools? Well, perhaps that's the question I need to ask her.
I think so. We got feedback from Michael Scarborough, who would be out at the school talking to schools, and so Michael would feed back in. But I'm not aware that we had any formal structure for feeding in the way that once the curriculum, the national curriculum, came in and was developed, I began to understand what we were doing. And I was privileged in that National Curriculum Council initially, I'd made a little series for them on IT, working with a woman called Sue Bennett.
Oh, yeah.
And Sue smashing. And then she came back to us and said, as the National Curriculum for History, I want you to make the inset material, the inset videos for that. So I was very closely in contact with the first iteration of the national curriculum in history and the attainment targets and so on. So it was in a privileged position of being able to feed that straight back into structuring our dramas.
So when you did the inset material, that must have been completely different from producing a drama for how we used to live.
Yeah, but I'd been doing documentaries for years as well.
Mm.
And the balance certainly changed. I mean, okay, yes, I did a 20-part series, 1902 to 26, another 20-part series on the 50s and the 60s. Mm. And then I think the curriculum began to rear its head.
1989, 90.
Yeah. And the economics were probably playing their part too. And I think by that stage, Channel 4 had taken over the commissioning. So instead of doing 20 episodes that ran over 3 years, repeated, we were doing 5 episodes a year. And they would not necessarily all be drama. So I'm not sure which was the first. It may have been I think the Civil War was one of the earliest ones we did, which was a documentary, 3 dramas and then another documentary. Mm. So you could introduce methodology and
sources, presumably, documents.
Yes, and certainly I think the Civil War was the first way you encouraged your viewers to challenge what they'd seen. They'd been engaged, they gave a toss about it because they'd seen the dramas, they'd been engaged by it, they cared about the characters. And whatever people were saying about empathy, I think empathy was an important aspect of it, even if it distorts understanding of history. I think I don't agree with some of the assertions of the anti-empathy argument.
I think a lot of that comes from the attempt to assess it, you know.
Yeah.
That people are happy with it when it's an adjunct or a part of learning history. When it becomes something you've got to grade people on, then they get worried because they think this is too subjective to grade somebody on.
So
how good you are at imagining.
Tick boxes, yes.
And so I think when you look at the writing on empathy, it is mostly about the attempts to assess it.
Yeah.
And also to privilege it perhaps over other things, more rational intellectual approaches.
Mm.
So, but TV obviously works on that level most supremely. It is, in fact, when I spoke to the BBC people, they were saying, this is what we felt we were about, enlivening the imagination. Did you also feel that?
Oh, very much so. Engaging, making people care. Encouraging. They would choose to identify with one person or another. But certainly the arrival of the national curriculum allowed us to generate material that, yes, encouraged them to deconstruct it and so on.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that was? Was it because the National Curriculum was more explicit?
Yeah.
And so that you address those things then?
Absolutely. And we're able to do it in a much more formalised way without, I hope, killing the dramatic impetus. By that time, the dramas had been reduced from half an hour to 20 minutes for slot reasons, not for economic reasons, I don't think. So you were tending to cram in teaching points, and they can become very dense in terms of dramatic content. And I always had to watch very carefully that you were getting your interwoven dramatic strands, that the teaching points were there, that the learning points were there, but that you're still making it work as drama rather than didacticism.
So in a sense you were less free than when you first started.
Yeah, but all creativity is a response to much creativity is a response to predetermined bounds. So the sonnet has 14 lines, yeah. And then you triumph over it. Okay. So it wasn't a creative problem, certainly, and I suppose I got more and more in bouncing thoughts with Frieda, and you know, as I got confidence in working with these very talented people.
When we started, you said 85% of primary schools used to watch how we used to live.
Yeah, and used it as the basis of what they were teaching. Yeah.
How do you know how they used it? Just Michael Scarborough reported on it?
Michael Scarborough, and I mean, we were objectively monitored.
Right.
From outside.
Did you have records of the sales of materials, the support materials?
Well, I can't speak for what records still exist,
yeah.
Because Yorkshire Television would not be good at keeping all those massive piles of paperwork. But somewhere there should be records of the sales. Later on, once the wonders of VHS were made available to us, I've got a record of those sales, you know. Mm. I mean, by the time I was leaving,
what year was that when you
I left
it?
In 95. Mm. They were, I think, the top seven sales of programmes on VHS in ITV were How We Used to Live.
Yeah.
You know, it was incredible, really. So teachers were still trying to use the series then. And I understand that even after the introduction of national curriculum, something like 50% of primary schools were still using the series.
They'd use the earlier ones, wouldn't they, the Victorians?
They were very keen, even on those, you know, the first Victorian series.
Mm. Well, that fits into the primary curriculum, the Victorians,
yeah.
And the 1930s, although... well, you'd made a series. I heard you made a series on the 30s.
They did. The series before I joined was the 30s running into the Second World War.
Mm.
Once the curriculum came in, obviously we identified the topic areas, and so we did a Tudors and Stuarts. Then we did early and late Victorians, sort of packages of five. Mm. So 1851, 1891, which seemed a nice balance. And they were particularly keen on the early Victorians one. So at a later stage, we made a five-part series about George and Robert Stevenson, essentially, which is very quite particular, but it had supporting documentaries which broadened the themes around it. But the driving force of the drama was George and Robert Stevenson, and of course there's all sorts of themes that you can associate with that. It's not just expansion, trade and industry or whatever. And then that was coupled with a rerunning of early Victorians. So it was from Iron Ways to Victorian Days, it sort of balanced. And that seemed to meet a lot of needs, but obviously I would have thought declining needs, but it was probably partly drifting away from what teachers were empowered to use in the curriculum, I don't know.
Are you talking about the computer coming in and the internet, things like that, or...?
Well, do you know, by the time I left, the computer hadn't made significant impacts. We tried to respond to that. The early and late Victorians, we worked with a company in Newcastle who did a CD-ROM, you know, one of those searchable ones. And even before that, probably with the BBC Micro, so it was about 1982 or something like that, we were doing, I presume, tape-based activities, you know, essentially choice sort of things. I mean, pretty primitive, but I mean, you couldn't be anything other than primitive at that stage. You were exploring this wondrous new medium, weren't we?
I wonder what's happened since, because schools don't show television programmes, schools' television programmes, in the same way.
No.
There's a lot of mixed media around, which mixes images, bits of video, etc. But I don't know what's produced in the form of drama for primary.
I don't know either, and I suspect it's probably too expensive, certainly for ITV to produce now, which is on its uppers, or maybe recovering a bit. But so much of the advertising went onto the web, and the money. Well, apparently some of it's now coming back, but I don't think we'll ever see that golden day. Those golden days of them being pretty flush with money. I mean, the first series I did, 20 parts, I believe cost £1.25 million.
Which at that time?
Which at that time was a lot of money. Mm. By the time I left, and one of the reasons I thought this can't go on, I was spending a quarter of the money available for educational broadcasting from Channel 4.
Goodness.
And I thought, they're never going to sustain this, you know, in a time of declining revenues, all these changes and so on.
So how long was Frieda writing for you?
Writing for the series. She started, I suppose she must have been doing it from the late 70s up to about 95.
So that's 20-odd years.
Yes. I mean, it's
so
a
very
long
consistent,
time.
Consistent, yeah.
The other person I haven't mentioned was the man who took over from Norman Longmay, Bob Unwin. And he was a doctor working in the University at Leeds.
Yes, I've come across him elsewhere.
Very interesting. I mean, great bloke. Then they, round about the time that we went to Channel 4, the Educational Television Company was set up. And their job became to promote, market, assess the materials that we were generating for educational television. And at that stage, they began to ease Bob out. I don't know rightly or wrongly. I mean, he was fairly rigidly academic and perhaps set his sights higher than some teachers wished to respond to. But I thought he was terrific. So again, there were changes there, and political changes, you know, within the structure.
Mm. I mean, my sense is that today, children see far less drama, historical drama, and far more short information-style media, because they're using the internet and they're using pre-prepared lesson types, which include lots of, you know, the electronic whiteboard, which include lots of media.
And is that fairly heavily formalised, the delivery of that?
No, I think it's allows the teacher to use it in different ways.
Yeah.
But there is some drama available, actually. I've come across some from Pearson for very small children, you know, for infants, where they're looking at Victorians. So it's possible that it's in different formats, not in the sort of delivered programmes, but you use it when you want to.
We began to try and break stuff down into modules, not necessarily the drama, but certainly the supporting documentaries. So when I did the Tudors, the main driver, which was the Shakespearean story, you know, Horton Towers and all that bit. Fascinating. But the first of the documentaries fell into three, you know, 6-minute chunks, as it were, and showing investigative approaches of one sort or another. The one I was told was the best was the documentary after the three Shakespearean dramas, where we took a bunch of kids, first of all to the Globe, which was then being built, and then to Stratford. And they were again investigating the evidence, you know. And
so that was done with a school, was it?
Well, it was done with a bunch of kids who'd had some drama training, so I think they were in a drama group, but essentially they were kids, you know, learning on the hoof and asking genuine questions. And but it's supposed to be a very good investigative documentary. I think there's a good one, again a part of a three-parter documentary. Kids investigating the evidence for the Fire of London. And I think what we did get quite good at was showing process, good exemplars. What perhaps, while I was involved, we were never quite sure what the outcomes were going to be. You know, So, I mean, maybe we could have been more driven by what we expected the children to get out of it, not necessarily in terms of process, but I think we got quite good at sharing process, but, you know, learning outcomes and so on. And maybe they got better at that later.
Well, it's an interesting point, because initially, others I've talked to have said that there was a consciousness that they shouldn't trespass on the teacher's role. That broadcasting had to be something different to what the teacher could do in the classroom.
Yeah.
And so there was a reluctance, actually, to specify what should be the outcomes, because this was part of the teacher's role.
Yeah.
And that may have been the same at Yorkshire Television, I don't know.
Yes, I mean, there was a reluctance. But at the same time, if you were actually providing a useful resource which enabled them to deliver 85% of the history teaching, then I suppose to that extent we were dictating.
Yeah, yeah.
Not dictating, but assisting the outcomes. You know, I mean, it would depend on the quality of the teacher, wouldn't it?
It would.
And to what extent they had the time to deconstruct what we were delivering. But we would never have wished to prescribe that. But we wanted to provide, yes, useful resources and engaging resources and so on.
Did you make any programmes for secondary?
Yes, we did an expansion trade and industry. I think that was only three programmes, and again that was a drama, and that was very much to do with slavery and some of those issues. The Civil War was key stage three, and I never know how well that was used. I mean, it was a good engaging drama. But it still mainly remained, you know, key stage two and downwards. The other interesting thing was how many peripheral activities happened as a result of the catalyst of the series. So there are lots of exhibitions in various museums. They would use it to brand, you know, Lincoln, Hull. You know, all over the North, certainly, there were How We Used to Live exhibitions that reflected the series.
And then you said the competitions for schools as well.
Yes, certainly in the early days, sponsored by the Midland Bank, now Hong Kong, Shanghai.
Whatever.